Okay, great. So I also am going to skip through some slides, and I'll say my disclosures. Right now, I have nothing to disclose. Sure. Thank you. So I'm going to present today on some local data that we gathered in Chicago and talk to you about how we have used that data to then move ahead and develop interventions. So as Steve said, I'm with the Sinai Urban Health Institute. We actually put this panel together because we work at a hospital, Mount Sinai Hospital in Chicago. And as a local hospital, we're sort of the research arm of the institute. And the hospital had this initiative of wanting to improve the health of its local communities. And in order to do so, we needed to gather data. In so doing, then we, you know, started to document, and I think actually became, in the last 10 years, sort of a leader in disparities research for the city. And not only documenting this work, but also now addressing it. And I think that's really key and also really vital to what I'm going to be talking about today. And just on that note, like, because I am coming from the hospital, we're on a panel full of individuals that we invited from county departments or city departments of health. So it makes us a little unique in this type of work. Let's see, I'm going to skip through this stuff right here. Okay, so I wanted to just give you a little bit of background. As I mentioned, the Sinai Urban Health Institute has done a lot of work around disparities, and over the last 10 years in particular has looked at how Chicago has progressed in achieving the Healthy People Goals, both in reducing them and then eliminating them. There's been three important studies that have come out, and as you can imagine, we've found that Chicago is not faring so well. In fact, when you compare it to national estimates that in making progress towards the Healthy People Goals, Chicago has found that disparities, especially around racial and ethnic disparities, they're widening as opposed to the United States, which seems to be narrowing. So because of that, as well as the fact that we have a lack of existing local level data, we decided to implement a local survey. So these are some of the same rationales that Mia just gave about the need for local data, as many of you probably know, that risk factor surveillance data are not available, and of course interventions are most effective at the local level. So we conducted three surveys, and it started with this initiative from the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation, which gave us a seed grant in 2002 to gather small area data. And so we started with six community areas in Chicago, and I'll show you a map shortly. But the six communities that were selected represent sort of the racial and ethnic makeup of the city, being white, black, and Hispanic. We were also interested in breaking out the Hispanic data because that traditionally is not available from existing data. So we also gathered information about Mexican and Puerto Rican data. Now, for those of you that aren't familiar with Chicago, we are a city of communities or ethnic communities, which makes the study of ethnic populations quite conducive. Fortunately or unfortunately, it's also quite segregated. But because of that, the nature of the city and the context in which we live, we're able to find community areas that are predominantly one ethnic group. They're very homogeneous. So again, I'll show you some of the maps shortly. I've put up here the methods, and I'm going to go through the methods of the other slides, the other surveys as well. But just to point out, in short, some of the things that are important to note. Community-based organizations participated with us in the questionnaire development, and I think that was really vital because they determined the types of questions we asked and made sure that the questions and the topics that were on the questionnaire would be things that they were interested in knowing about, which would then guide interventions down the road. So I think that's really important and not common. I think the behavioral risk factor surveillance survey doesn't ask us what we want to know. So we did use the same questions. So the questions that we asked would be asked the same so that they're comparable to compare to city and state level data. But I think the community input really guided us quite a bit. So as I mentioned, the survey was done face to face. And I think as a result of having the community participation and interviewers from the community and being native speakers both in English and Spanish, our participation rate was quite high. Because of the value of the data that other communities saw when we put the data out, the Jewish community approached us and asked us to also conduct a survey in their community. Because the Jewish population wasn't necessarily represented in one homogeneous community area, they actually designated a block area in which we would then survey. So there was a Jewish Orthodox community for which we now have data. Again, interviews were done face-to-face, and we also then adopted the questionnaire. We updated it with questions from the Jewish population and took off questions that may not have been relevant to them. After that, the Asian populations approached us. There's an organization called the Asian Health Coalition of Illinois, and they approached us about doing surveys in their populations. And so, again, subgroup data for Asian populations are rarely available. And for the first time now, we conducted a survey in the Chinese population. Again, wanting to do the survey face-to-face because we understand the importance of having that one-on-one communication with someone in order to really complete a survey for 1 hour. You know, on the telephone, most people won't even answer or agree to participate, let alone spend an hour with you. So again, we wanted to do it face-to-face and had to find the Chinese population in Chicago. So we thought, okay, Chinatown. And so we selected census blocks in that area that had the highest proportion of individuals that were Asian according to the census, and then went and door-to-door, and if they self-identified as Asian, they could participate. We weren't sure if people were Chinese or not. In fact, that was something very tenuous to ask about because people don't always identify that way. But we did find that 96% of the interviews were conducted in Mandarin or Cantonese, which told us that the vast majority of the folks we spoke to probably were of Chinese descent. Again, you know, the survey was done in person and so forth. One nuance here was that we did not do the survey for caretakers of children, so we did not have data about children, of which we did have for the previous two. And then the Vietnamese and Cambodian populations wanted to be interviewed, and again, this is the first time for which we have data on these populations in Chicago. This was a little bit more challenging because these populations are dispersed and aren't concentrated in one particular area, so geographically it was a little challenging. So we decided to adapt a unique method called respondent-driven sampling. It's a variation of snowball sampling in which one person gets a coupon and then they invite somebody else to participate. The initial seed, as they call it, is often decided upon through common surname from the telephone. And because of the respondent-driven sampling databases and the software that accompanies it, we're able to use the network to then adjust for getting a representative sample. So again, they had to self-identify as being Asian, and various waves were done. So the bottom line is that we conducted these four surveys, or five if you count the Vietnamese and Cambodian separately, to gather data about 10 community areas. There were 2,300 households total that were surveyed, and each of the surveys were designed to represent their specific population. And so here are the 10 communities. As you can see, the yellow community areas. This is the city of Chicago. It's divided up into 77 community areas. And the yellow community areas are the ones that were done in the initial batch of the Sinai survey, is what we call it, that was funded by the Robert Wood Johnson Foundation. And this is the racial breakdown. I'll show you. I'm going to go back and forth here. The racial composition of the two communities here, Norwood Park and West Ridge, which are Norwood Park is an all-white community, and then the Jewish population here. And then, actually, maybe let me do this differently. The Sinai survey had these yellow. The Norwood Park community is all white. This is two communities, Humboldt Park, West Town, which are the most important to know is that they're mixed communities in going through gentrification. And then this is where Sinai is located, right about there in between the North Lawndale, which is African American, and South Lawndale, a Mexican population. And then Roseland is an African American community on the south side. This is Armour Square, the Chinatown survey that was done. The Jewish communities, as I mentioned to you, the block area spanned these two communities. And then the two areas that had the populations of Cambodian and Vietnamese, they had to live in those communities, even though it was sort of coupon-driven. The Cambodian population lived in 14 of Albany Park, and number three, Uptown, was Vietnamese. So this is just the breakdown of the 10 communities, as I've listed here. I put them in order just for ease of understanding, oh goodness, by white, black, mixed, and then this is Mexican, followed by Asian communities. And I've presented all of the data that I'm going to show you. I'm going to present four key outcomes in that order. This is just the racial, income socioeconomic status to give you an idea. The white populations have the highest proportion of individuals with making more than $70,000 a year, and the yellow represents those that are making the proportion that are making less than $30,000 a year. And as you can see, most of the minority populations are in that group. In particular, the North Lawndale community, which is the poorer of the two black communities, and the Cambodian population. So I'm going to quickly go through these, as I've just gotten the notice that my time is soon up. The Insurance coverage, as you can see here, the white populations, this is the proportion of non-elderly adults that have coverage, and compared to those of the 50% and less than, you know, close to 50 in the Asian populations, those are immigrant communities, as you could imagine, would expect not, to not have as much coverage. Diabetes rates, very similarly found. The U.S. rate, the U.S. and the Chicago bars are the ones going across, if you didn't notice that already, but the white and Jewish population have very similar rates to the Chicago and the U.S. averages compared to those of the minority populations having much higher, in particular the Humboldt Park community, which is, I don't know if I mentioned this, but it's half black, a quarter Puerto Rican, and a quarter white. I mean, I'm sorry, a quarter Mexican. And this just showed us, if you look at the Mexican rate, we were surprised to see how low it is. And if you look at the diabetes mortality rate, you can see that the mortality rate is actually right here compared to Chicago is a lot higher. And so it was unusual to see that the diabetes prevalence rate was so much lower in the case that it told us that people are dying from diabetes but don't actually know that they're living with it. So if an intervention were to come in, the first thing we'd have to do is to figure out, you know, helping people identify being diagnosed with diabetes. The Puerto Rican rate, very similarly, was consistent with what we found. We broke down because these two communities were mixed, as I mentioned. We broke out the Puerto Rican rate for both populations since they resided in a quarter of both of them and found that the Puerto Rican rate actually was much higher than the other minority populations even within those communities, rates that we had never seen before, actually. These are the highest rates that were ever documented that we could find. And it was consistent with the mortality rate being very high in those communities. I'm going to skip ahead. So the child obesity rate was also astonishingly high. We found that, as I mentioned, only seven of the community areas had child data around obesity and overweight, and we found that two-thirds of the populations and all the minority populations were overweight or obese, and that included the Jewish population, which is also very shocking, and you'll see that they actually responded to this. Oops, I'm going the wrong way. Okay. Smoking rates were also quite high. About a quarter of Chicago and U.S. Population smoke, and as you can see across the lines going across in this, the averages point out that the mixed black and rates were actually a lot higher. For the Asian population, they were actually surprised. The community groups told us that that seemed really low. And when we broke it down by male-female, we found that the male rate was actually about 30% compared to about 2% for women. And so and that was consistent for two of those populations, which again tells us that men in the Chinese community were smoking at about the same rate as the overall rates that we saw in some of the African-American populations. So that's just the tip of the iceberg. You know, there are many, many questions that were asked on all of the surveys, close to about 400 or 500 variables each. As I mentioned, I just touched on some of this, as Mia had to do. And as I started, the key to this whole thing is gathering data was to do something about it. And we really believe that if we hadn't done something about it, we would have failed. So this was, you know, over the last 7 or 8 years, and since then, much has happened. We've put out many reports. Presented to all the organizations that we've worked with. I think hundreds of presentations have been made to community-based organizations as a report back, and we've often gotten their responses as well. And I'm just going to highlight a couple of things quickly. The diabetes rate, as I mentioned to you, was very high in the Puerto Rican population, and in this sort of model of putting data out and then having the community react, we found a task force came together. They came up with a response of how are we going to do this, how are we going to fix this, and held a summit, galvanized the community. You know, the summit had almost 200, 300 people that came and heard about the data, but also put out recommendations on things that can happen. And as a result, also then came up with, wrote grants to get money, and they actually got a $2 million grant from NIH and a $1 million for North Lawndale and two communities, and have sort of a diabetes empowerment center now right in the heart of their community where they're working to address diabetes. All of these data had come out in the newspapers, and so here's some of the highlights of that. I'm wrapping up. And then obesity, same thing. We found that there are many public-private partnerships that came up. Policy changes were made in the Chicago Public Schools, and this is by various organizations throughout the city of Chicago, so it wasn't just us doing this. The data started to get out, and all the organizations started to realize the importance and value of the local data to say, you know, we can do something with this. Most importantly, you know, here's a quote from the Jewish Federation where they realized that teachers and rabbis probably knew that there was an obesity problem, but didn't get motivated. until that we showed them the extent of the obesity problem and that it was much bigger than the general population is when people started to realize we need to do something. And so they also developed a community of wellness. And here's some of the articles that came out of this. Smoking rates, same thing. It's the same story of how communities sort of come together. So I hope I emphasize the importance of local data. As you can imagine, the prevalence rates can be vastly different than city, state, and national estimates, just as Steve opened with, and I think Mia also demonstrated. And that obviously this reveals various substantial variation, but most importantly, that it has the potential to galvanize communities so that they can organize around a topic of interest. And it can lead to community-driven initiatives that are often more sustainable and culturally appropriate. The implications of what we've already done is that many communities have organized, and I would say we've at least been able to record over $15 million have come to communities that are often underserved and overlooked by traditional sources of funding, both by the city as well as private foundations. So we think that we've really accomplished a great deal in the city of Chicago as a result of this work. And as Steve mentioned, all of this has been documented in a book, and it's what we're calling the Sinai Model. I don't think it's too unusual to see other cities also doing something similar. I'm hoping to hear that shortly. But this model is the idea of gathering local data, and we have the methods of how to do that clearly articulated in the book, and how to analyze that in terms of relative terms, both for reporting back to communities so that they can actually see the importance and vitality of the data. Engage communities and evaluate work. So here's our book, as Steve already talked about, and I just wanted to thank everyone. I do want to just mention one last thing, that there is a quote that came in the New York Times that they wrote up about our book, and there's a woman that responded to this article, and I just thought this quote was really touching. She said, "I was heartened to read of the Greater Humboldt Park Community Diabetes Empowerment Center. Wish we had that program back in the 1940s when my dad, Irv, and many other Jews on the Division Street block suffered from the same illness. Alas, at 48, a three-pack Camel smoker, overweight, and a severe diabetic, Dad succumbed to a massive heart attack." And I just thought that was really touching because people's lives have been touched throughout the years, and for the first time, we're actually now doing something as a community. So, just thought I'd end with that. Sorry for...